The governor speaks out in favor of two-parent families. Is that controversial? Dan Coats criticizes the Obama administration position on Iraq. Marlon Stutzman loses a leadership bid, and state lawmakers make fast work of Technical Correction Day. That plus a leadership change in state government, a number one designation we don't want, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending June 20, 2014. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence faced criticism for comments he made in support of two-parent families. The governor's remarks were made at a summit on the family and the economy hosted by his administration. While speaking there, he said that family is a key indicator of success. Among those who took issue are gay marriage advocates who say they believe in the success of all families. But in a one-on-one interview, the Republican governor pointed out that the theory he cited was first put forward by the Brookings Institution, a Democratic think tank.
That if you finish high school, if you get a job or go on to school, and if you wait to have kids until you're married, you have discovered the pathway out of poverty. It'll be better for them, and it'll certainly be better for Indiana. Nothing of this discussion about the importance of two-parent families should take anything away from the heroic efforts of single parents. Or people have gone through the heartbreak of divorce.
Is the governor on the right track? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Jennifer Wagner, what is there to criticize in the governor's comments?
Is what he said controversial? Probably not, but his definition of family is so narrow that it excludes same-sex couples. And while he mentions single parents and those going through divorces, I find it troubling that we have decided that the only family that deserves recognition is a two-parent man-woman household. What do you say to those kids who are being raised by single moms or same-sex couples? What do you say to them? Why do we treat them as less?
Well, he said he thinks they're heroes, right?
Well, he didn't mention anything about same-sex couples.
He did call the single parents heroes.
Right, but... Yeah.
His support for traditional marriage is well-documented, unchanged.
But that's different than family. We're talking about the word family, and that is a very different, very personal thing to each person who considers themselves a part of one.
What's he trying to accomplish here?
Look, there's indisputable evidence that the stronger the family, the better off the family will be long haul, the stronger the economy will be, the less imposing it will be on government and government services. It goes to everything from education to the penal system, you name it. It goes all the way down the line. The statistics are there to back up exactly what he said. He's actually talking about this as a basis of policy decisions. And you can look at what he's done since he's been there, you know, trying to do things to make everything from adoption easier in the state of Indiana, early childhood education, all those things.
Well, he created family impact statements to go along with state rules and regulations.
Exactly. You can't pass a rule or reg without having a family impact statement of what that does to a family. He made specific mention of those who are single parents in this situation. I mean, there's nothing controversial at all about what he said here. And statistically, he's absolutely correct. The more we can nurture strong families, the better off all of us are going to be. And strong families can take on many different forms.
So is he becoming a lightning rod for the wrong reasons here?
Well, he's been a lightning rod. For those who would criticize him on this point, he already was a lightning rod. I don't think he dug himself any deeper. But I think if you look at the comment, as Mike says, there's really not a lot there that can be proved wrong with empirical data. The research done by any number of groups, nonpartisan and groups on with both party affiliations, one or the other, have found exactly what has been said here, that it's basically common sense. You're probably better off. It's not about philosophy necessarily, about morals. It's about, do you have a greater household income? Do you have more stability? Do you have more engagement on the part of parents? Maybe he was unfairly criticized for. In some ways, he referred to the Brookings Institute. It reminded me of the Murphy Brown speech that Dan Quayle made during the 1992 campaign. And the reason I bring that up, if you fast forward 20 years, the Washington Post ran a piece written by the Brookings researcher, I think that he is citing, who did the research, that said Dan Quayle was right 20 years later in terms of the data and what it suggests to be a more solid footing for children in those settings.
Dan Quayle was also a lightning rod.
Look, the problem for the governor here is that he has been so vocally out front in the one-man, one-woman debate that the implication is that other families are somehow lesser. And I think that he is getting criticized for this, and probably a little unfairly. But the implication is clear, and it's there. And I think Jennifer's right when you talk about the nature of family. And you said the same thing, Mike. Families are made up in many different ways. Grandparents are raising children, aunts, uncles, yeah. Men, women. You know, it doesn't matter. The stability is what matters. And if you have a good relationship among the people who are heading that household, then you'll have a better outcome. And that's where the governor's got a bit of a problem, because it seems like he's differentiating between man and woman and everyone else.
Wait, is he trying to help the economy, or is he trying to push social issues?
I can't climb into his head. I think that the data do speak for themselves. You know, he's very clear about his view of it in a moral sense, but I don't have any idea whether he's, you know, making that economic or moral decision.
Like there. I said before, I mean, this is part of a policy decision-making process. The more we can nurture families, the stronger families can be, the better off we're going to be in the state of Indiana, both economically and in state government.
But the bigger gain, I think, let's cut to the chase, the bigger gain is probably political than economic, I'm not disagreeing with the premise of his argument, but I think this positioning right now does him more good politically with the
constituency. Layering of the policy since he's been there, and it all aims at this very thing.
Moving on. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said this week that the Iraqi government has requested American airstrikes in the effort to control the terrorist group known as ISIS. General Martin Dempsey's comment in a Senate committee hearing caused Indiana Republican Dan Coats to question administration strategy.
Isn't it too late now to be sitting down and talking to members of Congress and basically saying, let's look at the options?
Well, Senator, it's only late if you suggest that we could have stopped it in some way. So this all started and stops with Iraq. And there is very little that could have been done to overcome the degree to which the government of Iraq had failed its people. That's what has caused this problem.
Mike McDaniel, is Senator Coates becoming the sort of voice on foreign affairs that Dick Lugar used to be?
I think there's a part of him that is very strongly headed in that direction. The reason, having been an ambassador to Germany and having participated in the world stage that way and knowing what's involved in the kind of day-to-day diplomacy that goes on in making foreign policy, I think he sees himself as doing more of that. And in this particular situation, I think you see the culmination of a lot of frustration, both Republicans and Democrats, who are worried that our stature in the world is somehow diminished because we keep drawing lines in the sand and people cross them with no consequences. And you add that in with the fact that, we had the situation where we traded the five terrorists for the one prisoner without any consultation with Congress at all. I think all of that's kind of come to a head at the same time. And clearly what's going on in the Middle East is in the national interest of the United States. And it has the potential of spilling into Jordan. And if it does, then Israel's involved and we're headed to real, real problems.
I would say that I think with Senator Lugar, he was a little less partisan.
Yes, I think that is definitely fair, and actually came back a little bit to haunt him in the primary election that he lost. This is one of those situations where President Obama can't win. He's got critics on the left who don't want him to go anymore, have any more boots on the ground or any more involvement, and he's got critics on the right who think that, you know, we need to be more aggressive and we need to address the situation. I think he's taken the right tone. He's taken a measured approach to the situation, and we're not committing massive amounts of troops right now. But we do have a vested interest in making sure that Iraq doesn't become another Afghanistan and harboring terrorists.
So should members of Congress be posing tough questions now, or should they be rallying behind the White House?
No, I think that there's always time to ask tough questions. I don't think there's a bad time to do that kind of thing. The problem is when those questions are used for a political gain, and I'm not saying that's the case here with Senator Coates at all, but we've seen that, and you know, Mike mentions the fact that the Bergdahl exchange occurred without the consultation of Congress. I'm guessing that part of that was because of either leaks or the politicization ahead of time. That's probably what the administration was worried about. So while we've got this poisonous atmosphere on the Hill and in Washington in general, it's going to be a difficult task to try to do these very important international affairs.
So Senator Coates and others on Capitol Hill are clearly engaged. Is the public engaged in this?
I think the public, they're going to have to be engaged because it's an issue that, you know, we live in a global society. I mean, it's going to be affecting us at the gas pump. It's going to be affecting our loved ones who are overseas, perhaps engaged in combat or at least advisory roles that may resemble combat. People, I think, though, for the time being, just don't even want to think about it. They feel that for a decade or more, they've been embroiled in a conflict. You know, the thought was we're drawing down, we're getting out, mission accomplished, and here we go again. I think there's almost it's the denial phase right now.
We're a weary people. We don't want to go back to war. By the way, I would add a war that President Obama didn't get us into, not to be too partisan. But, you know, people don't want to see our troops in danger. So there are ways to address this conflict, the situation, without endangering them, and I think that's probably where we're going to wind up.
I think Americans are reengaging in this situation because they're starting to realize just how volatile it is, and this has the potential of really being bad for this country.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is the Dan Coates criticism of the Obama administration constructive? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, was that even a goal? Last week's question, was Richard Murdoch's Nazi comparison accurate? 22% said yes, 40% said no. 38% said it's wrong either way. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana Congressman Marlon Stutzman ran a campaign for GOP whip this week. It's a position that came open as a result of Eric Cantor's primary defeat and subsequent resignation as majority leader. Stutzman was one of three candidates for whip, the number three post among Republicans in Congress. He lost to Representative Steve Scalise of Louisiana. Scalise won on the first ballot. Stutzman lost despite the fact that he had Tea Party support. John Katzenberger, will Marlon Stutzman gain anything from that experience?
Yeah, I think he has. And he's also had this uncanny ability to run a lot of races. Since he was first elected to the General Assembly in 2002, I think Ed Feigenbaum reported that he's run 8 or 10 races in the time, and look where he's at. You know, he's vying
for ambitious and fearless.
I think that's a good characterization, and that serves him well. I mean, he has shown an ability to move rapidly through the ranks, and I think that even though he was defeated in this race, it will serve him well, and he'll find himself in a more important position.
Some thought that what he was trying to do here was leverage himself into another position, like chairman of the Republican Study Group.
Right. I mean, you do look at that pecking order, and those positions, as this musical chairs, and everybody seems to be moving up one effectively, that comes open as well. You don't get anywhere in Congress with these types of positions by just sort of shrinking off into the corner and saying, you know, I'll dance when you come and ask me to dance. Yeah. You have to go and put your name out there. And if you don't get it this time, I don't think there's any knock on him. His name will be top of mind perhaps next time something comes up of that sort.
He hasn't worn out his welcome yet.
Absolutely not. Congress, as John said, if you sit back and wait to be drafted, you're never drafted. You got to elbow your way to the table, and that's what he's doing, and he's smart to do it that way. It didn't hurt him at all. I think it will affect him in a positive way going forward. What I loved about all of this as these dominoes took to change positions was that the Indiana delegation was in about every camp, which was a smart thing to do because somebody's going to win those jobs.
Right.
And it's smart to have somebody from your state involved in every one of them. I thought whoever decided that was the way to go really made a good decision.
Well, Stutzman has the longest tenure of anybody in the Indiana delegation, and he got there in 2010.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they don't have a lot of clout.
For the Republicans.
No, not at all. And
right.
You know, I agree.
Right.
This isn't
not Pete Visclosky.
Yeah.
That's true. And Congressman Carson. So they... there's two strategies of running and getting in leadership in D.C. There's the I like to call it the Finding Nemo, just keep running. Or there's the Frank Underwood, count your votes, make sure you've got your votes, call in your chits, and I'm going to put Congressman Stutzman in the Dory Finding Nemo camp.
Well, keep in mind, though, this is the equivalent of running for the equivalent of an open seat.
Right.
You know, he's not going... I mean, the insane thing for him to do at this point in his career would be to try... Well, he... has made noise about this in the past, which is why he maybe has lost positions in the past. But if you go after John Boehner or something like that, who the occupant, the incumbent, if you will, that and you lose, then you've got some repercussions.
You're saying there wasn't much of a downside here.
No, it's an open seat. Right. Again, because of Eric Cantor's loss, it's
all
open.
Right. State lawmakers made history this week with a first-of-its-kind session called to fix flaws in two new state laws. It took just 45 minutes as the Indiana House voted unanimously in favor of changes, and then the state Senate cast a unanimous vote of its own. The biggest problems were in a bill that rewrites criminal sentences. Lawmakers worked on it for 2 years.
But we got to be careful that we don't, you know, trip over to a line where people say, well, let's just come back here and do another bill or fix some bills. We really weren't happy with the outcomes. We can't do that, and we won't.
And Senate President Pro Tem David Long there, John Schwantes, is there a better way to do this? Two non-controversial votes with no discussion, is it necessary to bring all 150 lawmakers back to the State House?
I think there's that little thing... the law and the procedure, the House rules, state constitution, a lot of things would get in the way of just sort of phoning it in, I guess, if that's the point of the question. Yet this is a requirement that they come, they're on the floor, they cast the vote. I can't think of a session where there hasn't been the need for some sort of technical correction. Now, oftentimes
it waits until January.
It just so happens that the sense was that these couldn't wait. So, I don't see that it was a particular problem.
Technical Correction Day was created 20 years ago. It was used once before for a veto override. This is the first time it's lived up to its name. Good idea?
Yeah, I do think it's a good idea, and I do think that it's you should use some discretion before you decide whether to do it. But here you're talking about a criminal code that takes effect on July 1st, and there was some concern that it would affect people who are already incarcerated or would affect some of the other prosecutions that might be going on around the state. So it's better to fix it before it takes effect. I think it did. The system worked. You know, they worked on this bill. They worked on it some more. They passed the bill. They found some mistakes. They found them before it became a problem, and they fixed it. Good for them.
I'm told legislative leaders were very reluctant to do this.
Well, I think there was a fear among some of the activist groups that it would be used for more than just technical corrections, that there would be a little bit of sleight of hand. I think this actually raises the point, you know, should we just go to a full-time legislature so we don't have to rush things through in a short or long session so that we don't have to make these kind of mistakes and then fix them, you know, a couple months later in fear that we've really messed up our laws.
Well, does it point up flaws in the system as well as a couple of bills?
No, not really. I think the system worked. I think John nailed it. And as far as using this as a reason to go to full-time legislature, I'll take the one day technical correction day and the cost of that versus a full-time legislature in Indiana any time. You know, this
essentially
was done,
there's no cost. If those people come
exactly
back,
right.
If they come back to the state house and do constituent work, they get the in session per diem, right? And
yes.
So the chances are
exactly
the same money was going to be spent.
And this was a situation where really this was about sentencing. And Republicans and Democrats alike agreed that a mistake was made, and they had to get it done before the new law took effect in July. So,
all right. If it was differences over the planned expansion of the Healthy Indiana plan that led to the ouster of Family and Social Services Secretary Deb Minot this week, the governor isn't saying so. In a one-on-one interview, Mike Pence said he holds Minot in high regard and avoided specifics about the appointment of a new secretary that could take place as early as next week.
As a CEO, I literally make personnel decisions every day, and I have to always put first and foremost the interest of the people of Indiana and what I think is in the best interest of having agencies that serve our people in the forefront of my decision. And so, you know, I can say there's no single factor in our decision to take the leadership of FSSA in a different direction.
Jennifer Wagner, what does this look like?
It looks to me like you've got a governor and you've got a cabinet secretary who are at odds over when this program can start. And she's saying later, he's saying sooner, we're telling the federal government sooner. And the end of the day, we could have done this 18 months, 12 months ago, which has been my argument all along. We could have just expanded Medicaid coverage and helped all these Hoosiers. Now we're bickering about the politics, we're bickering about the way it looks.
Well, and I think a big factor here, though, is the Hospital Association, which agreed to pay assessments, and they want it by the first of the year. So if you're going to do this, you got to make them happy since they're putting up a lot of money.
Well, you want the system to be in place as soon as you can. And he was universally lauded for coming up with this scenario that looks like the federal government's going to sign off on. But we all know that anytime you've got any huge a program like this, and you're talking about the computerization of this stuff, we've seen it in other parts of government. If they're not on the same
we've
page...
We've seen it in FSSA with the IBM.
And you can't. Yeah. And if you're not on the same page with the person that's responsible for making that change, you need to make a change. And they're not saying it, but I'm convinced that's what this is, and a change should be made. Yeah. Now, whether he's right about moving as fast as he is, and whether you can do it or not, that'll just yet to be determined. But there's a lot to do here, and this is a huge problem to deal with to try to get this transition done.
So is this an example of leadership?
Well, I know the governor, in your interview, Jim, he pointed out that as a CEO, he makes that reference that he has to make those kinds of personnel decisions. And I guess you could say that this is, I'm sure, a decision he would have chosen not to make, in part because it does shine a brighter light on the fact that there was disagreement, apparent disagreement within the administration. And now he addressed it, but I'm sure he would have just as soon had a unified front where there wasn't a question of any sort of crack in the wall.
You know, I think it's his job to do that. It's his decision to make. But I do think you got to be careful, Mike, when you say that this was universally lauded, because there are a number of people who are more conservative who don't like the idea of the HIP plan being used to expand
including
coverage.
Buying radio ads at the moment.
Right. And so, you know, he's taken some criticism on both sides because some folks who, you know, as Jennifer enunciated, think that it should have expanded Medicaid, just expanded it. So
right.
I think he's very sensitive to that and ought to be.
Finally, Indiana has a number one ranking this week that we don't want. According to a new study by the website WalletHub, Indiana has the country's highest rate of fatalities among teenage drivers. Car crashes are the leading cause of death among 15 to 18-year-olds in this state. Kim Heine is a driver's ed instructor in Greenwood who says teens are most prone to distractions like the radio and their phones, and they tend to forget things.
Lanes, the lines in the road, the wheel. You can't forget little stuff like that. You always have to be looking out. Some people just kind of focus on what's right in front of them instead of visually moving your eyes, checking your mirrors, paying attention to everything and everyone. You can't trust anybody, so you have to protect yourself always. Straighten your wheels.
Mike McDaniel, should teens face more driving restrictions?
Well, unfortunately, they're always going to be the target. We've worked hard in the state with Tom Weiss and others through the years to bring down the incidence of death by drunk driving and those kinds of things, and really did a pretty good job of it. But now with all of the devices that right. people are using, and not just teenagers, It's easy to point at the teenagers because they're using them more than older people are. But seriously, this is a very serious problem. Although I see people every day still texting and driving, and that's as dangerous as drinking and driving, every bit as much.
Absolutely. Why is it worse here? Why is it worse here?
Well, maybe it's worse because we have more roads. People have to drive farther to get where they're going. But, you know, I agree. We have to do something about this problem. And I'm terrified as the mom of a six-year-old. I got cut off yesterday by a 15-year-old driver's ed student. And,
at least he was in driver's ed.
That's true. Well, I think we should do more, maybe require a longer period of time. And also parents, get in the car with your kids.
There's the thing. We've done plenty to make this safer by law. We need to take the responsibility and make everybody drive more safely.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Jennifer Wagner, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T, rethink possible.